You're listening to Opus Talks, where you'll be in on conversations with insiders in the energy, chemicals, and environmental commodities markets. Guests share insights into the latest trends and innovations, industry challenges, and much more. Let's dive into the conversations that explore where the energy economy is headed, right here on Opus Talks.
Hello, my name is Humberto Juarez Rocha, and I am a senior editor here at Opus, where I cover compliance, carbon markets, and nature markets around the world. I'm very excited for today's episode, as we have a special guest joining us remotely from Brasilia, so that we can learn more about the Brazilian carbon market, also known as the Sistema Brasileiro de Comércio de Emissões, that was signed into law by President Lula in December of last year. My guest and I will talk about how this plays into the growing world of international carbon markets as we look ahead to COP30 in Belém next month. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome Secretary Aloísio Melo. Secretario Melo, bem-vindo a nosso podcast aqui em Opus.
Hello, Humberto. Thanks for the invitation. I'm currently the National Secretary for Climate Change in the Ministry of Environment and Climate Change in Brazil. I've been working with carbon markets in Brazil for the last, let's say, 14 years, maybe, mostly in the Ministry of Finance and recently in the Ministry of Environment and Climate Change.
We're very glad to have you here, Secretary Melo. It's exciting. I just want to put a little context into our conversation for our audience who may not know. So a carbon market, just to give an example, is a cap and trade system that's based on the principle that the polluter pays. It's a system that's designed to have a limited number of carbon allowances that are put into the market. Companies are required to purchase these carbon allowances as part of their compliance obligations. If a company emits less carbon dioxide than they plan to, they can buy carbon allowances and can sell those allowances to companies who need to purchase more allowances due to higher levels of carbon emitted. This system is designed to incentivize companies to decarbonize and lower their pollution. So with this development, Brazil is joining a growing list of countries that are legislating and establishing their own domestic carbon markets around the world. This list includes Japan, Turkey, and Mexico, among many, many others. Brazil, however, is playing an important role as the largest economy in Latin America and the host of this year's United Nations Conference of the Party, also known as COP30, that will take place in Belém next month. So very excited to start talking about this carbon market with you, Secretary Melo. To start off, we're coming up on a year since President Lula signed the law establishing the Brazilian carbon market. And in recent days, the Brazilian government created the Extraordinary Secretariat for the Carbon Market within the Ministry of Finance to develop regulations of this market. What are some of the initial results that we should expect from this managing body?
Yes, this was, I think, a first and very important step for the process of implementing the domestic emissions trading scheme. With this new institutional arrangement, with the management body or agency in the Ministry of Finance. So we have that decree establishing that extraordinary secretariat, that is the formal name, which will be in charge of developing, delivering the initial, the basic regulations to operate the domestic ETS, the SBCE, as you mentioned the name in Portuguese. And that includes, for instance, the regulation related to the GHG reporting for the companies, the entities that will be regulated, implementing the national registry for the assets that will be traded under the SBCE, the allowances, but also the carbon credits that eventually will be admitted in the system. Also, the definition of the scope of the domestic ETS, which is a very important definition. What are the sectors, the size, the companies beyond the thresholds defined by the law that will be included in the first step of the implementation? So that kind of a regulation should be delivered in the next period based on studies that and economic assessments that are already been undertaken with a cooperation managed by the Ministry of Finance and also with the participation of the Ministry of Environment and Climate Change, our team, and all other agencies as well. Another thing that's important to mention, Humberto, we also had the approval of a specific area to manage carbon credits and the international instruments under Article 6 of the Paris Agreement in the Ministry of Environment and Climate Change. So we have also a new area here in our secretariat that will be integrated to the whole coordination of the national mechanisms for carbon markets in Brazil.
Very, very interesting. And Secretary, I'm very interested, especially, you know, as you well said, defining the scope is very, very important. Learning about Brazil's system has been very interesting due to its electricity and power matrix. It already relies around 90% on renewable energy, hydroelectricity, solar and wind capacity, as opposed to fossil fuels, which is an incredibly unique system and market compared to, say, the EU ETS here in Europe. As I understand it, the SPCE will cover around 25% of the country's greenhouse gas emissions, namely from the energy, waste, and industrial sectors. Could you walk us through as to why these sectors are included and perhaps why not agriculture or land use? Why are they not in the Brazilian market as you talk about the scope being defined currently?
Yes, at this point, we still don't have the definition of are the sectors that will be definitely included. What the law defined is that we have two thresholds for the regulation. One is a threshold for the entities, the companies that could have the obligation of reporting annually their greenhouse gas emissions, which is a threshold of 10,000 tons of CO2 equivalent per year. So this is an initial threshold. The other threshold is 25,000 tons of CO2 equivalent per year for the companies that could be included in the ETS. That means the companies that will have the obligation for each ton they emitted, they should have one asset, either an allowance or carbon credit that in the future would be allowed in the system. So 10,000, 25,000 is the basic definition. In the law doesn't establish what are the sectors that necessarily will be included. One thing that it was a definition in the Congress is that the definition that the agricultural sector is excluded from the basic regulation, that from the two obligations that I mentioned. So this is the only thing that the law clearly establishes. So the specific definition should be made after the economic assessments, you know, what are the conditions that indicate what are the best sectors suited to be part of the regulation, taking into account marginal abatement costs and also the regulatory costs of complying, you know, with the legislation and so on. And as you mentioned, also their contribution to the overall GHG emissions in the country. So that kind of elements are being taken into account to have the clear definition of the sectors that will be regulation in the first phase. And also, we also need to have in mind that is approach that will have different steps until the full implementation of the ETS. So we have the first phase of the basic regulations, then a learning phase, let's say, for the companies to internalize the GHG reporting. And then at some point, the implementation of the full regulation with the obligation of reporting and making the match of carbon assets, which is the first allocation plan that should be initiated by 2029, 2030, the full scheme operating. So we still have to assess the economic, let's say, rationale for including or not including each of the sectors. This is something that the team there, the Minister of Finance, will be studying and defining in the next period.
And we look forward to covering the development of the market and learning about these economic assessments. Secretary, you mentioned earlier about Article 6 credits. Brazil is a leader in supplying carbon credit projects. Could you tell us, and you mentioned this before, but could you tell us what progress has been made in establishing a national registry or standard for Brazilian carbon credits? And could you walk us through how Article 6 credits are part of or could be integrated with the SBCE?
Yes, Humberto, these are two very important topics, carbon credits and how they can be or could be integrated to the ETS, or how we are planning to operate Article 6. So in the first topic, In our legislation, the law that was approved in December, it defines that, yes, we can have offsets in the domestic ETS. That means the companies or entities that will be regulated will have probably the option to buy carbon credits to offset their obligations under the scheme. There's no definition at this point about, for instance, the amount of carbon credits that they could purchase, the percentage. We have been learning in the international experience that we must be careful about that definition, otherwise it can jeopardize the price signal in the system. So there are limits that should be defined in order for the system to operate properly. And the other and very important thing is the assessment of the integrity of the credits, if they are really delivering real carbon GHG reductions or removals. And for that, the carbon credit or the methodologies that are generating the credits, they should go through an assessment on their integrity, but also on other elements, on the quality of the assets, the tracking, and so on. And that must be made by the management body, by the extraordinary secretariat in the Ministry of Finance. And for this, we already have been doing assessments on the international experience and how to evaluate what are the kinds of credits, what is the domestic, let's say, landscape for carbon crediting, and so on. We in the Ministry of Environment have a specific, let's say, responsibility in that agenda in terms of looking at the forest-based carbon credits, which is a specific area with a huge potential in Brazil, either for credits from a forest restoration, afforestation, and so on, which is an important part of our national climate policy. We are incentivizing and financing many initiatives of forest restoration, but also we have potential of other kinds of carbon credits based on forests, like red plus and so on, which have some other specific challenges in terms of integrity, how they are managing the relations with traditional communities and so on. Just to say that we will be part of the process of assessing the carbon credits and then informing the, let's say, the authorization or the accrediting of the methodologies in the regulated system. This is part of the process, and we do believe that carbon credits can play an important role in Brazil in terms of delivering actual finance for mitigation activities, and especially for activities related to forest restoration and forest management in general. So we expect in the next period that the management body, the Ministry of Finance, will start the process of actually building the framework to assess the credits and to start making this accreditation process. Regarding Article 6, we are in the Ministry of Finance, we are the national authority for that. We have this process in 6.4, which is the new the Paris Agreement crediting mechanism, the PEC-M, the acronym. We are following the discussions under the secretariat of the mechanism on how to address the methodologies for carbon removals. We have a great interest in that. It's very important for Brazil and for other countries, especially related to nature-based solutions for carbon removals. And we were kind of concerned of how things were evolving there. We provide some inputs for the debate, and we do expect that 6.4 will deliver methodologies that we can drive, let's say, investment in that area of nature-based solutions for carbon removals. It's important for us. It's important for the world, for the global agenda of addressing the challenge of delivering real mitigation sites. So we are expecting the next steps of the discussion on the permanence and how to address the risks of that kind of activities without making a specific, let's say, choices in terms of technological opportunities that we have for carbon removals. For 6.2, the approach that allow countries to trade mitigation outcomes, the international, the ITMOS in the acronym, we are also preparing to operate that mechanism in Brazil. We are discussing bilateral agreement with some countries, let's say, a general framework to operate that kind of mechanism, but we still are discussing internally and with the private sector in Brazil how to operate, let's say, in a safe and responsible manner that mechanism for Brazil, because one, we have a very ambitious NDC. We can only, let's say, make agreements and trade ITMOs based on real reductions beyond what we already have committed to in our NDC. So how we can do that in a safe way? The other thing is how to prioritize the opportunities that we have in terms of making agreements around ITMOs. Some sectors, they do demand new investment, new technologies, and maybe that could be some peers. But what we need is to build, and what we are doing is to build a good framework to take good decisions in terms of 6.2 to make a strategic use of this mechanism to bring additional investment in our mitigation strategies and allow the country to move faster in our commitments in based on our NDC.
Actually, that was going to be one of my questions towards the end, but you mentioned Brazil has an ambitious NDC of reducing net greenhouse gas emissions by 56 to 67% by 2035, based on 2005 levels. As you said, you will need to weigh how much domestic resources you put towards reducing and removing carbon emissions with how much you open up to trading under Article 6, 6.2, 6.4. Could you just walk us through a bit of how you make that determination? What are some indicators that will demonstrate to you that your country will be able to supply Article 6 credits?
Okay, just one point. Our NDC, our target is to reduce by 59 to 67% of our GHG emissions based in 2005. So it's really ambitious. It's a real challenge for us. As you know, in Brazil, we have a specific profile of GHG emissions. Something like 70% of our GHG emissions are based on land use, either related to deforestation or agriculture. So we have a specific challenge on in terms of how to actually reduce those GHG emissions. The NDC target was established after many debates internally in the government with economic sectors, but we used a very good, let's say, economic tool in order to build what are the best pathways for Brazil to meet the long-term target of being net zero in all greenhouse gases by 2050. And taking into account also the former commitments that we have in our first NDC in 2025, 2030, and so on. So we run that modeling, a very specific and very detailed modeling of different economic sectors in Brazil, all mitigation opportunities and costs in the different sectors to find out what was the most cost-effective, let's say, pathway that we could follow in order to meet those targets. And based on that, we could find what is the role, the expected contribution of the different economic sectors for that mitigation trajectory, and what could be the target, the commitments for 2035. So we defined it as a range, taking into account all the uncertainties that we are living in the economic landscape outside. And so based on that, we have in our national climate plan that national target translated into sectoral targets, and based on that, what are the mitigation actions that should be undertaken in the different economic sectors and different policies that we have. And the carbon markets and the carbon credits can and should play an important role in delivering those mitigation trajectories. Because of that, we are always putting that focus on GHG removals in forest restoration, but also in innovations and new technologies that could deliver a mitigation in the energy sector, in the industry sector, in transport, and so on. So this is, let's say, the framework, the overall strategy that we have, and the SBCA, the domestic cap and trade system, will be part of that framework. As you mentioned in the beginning, Humberto, we have also that specificity that in the energy or in the electricity sector, we already have something like 85 to 90% of renewables. So it's a very different starting point when compared to Europe or other regions of the world, where the first step is to replace fossil-based power generation for renewables. We already are there. So what are the next, let's say, potentials that we have, like in industry, as you mentioned, in waste, in transport? So this is the kind of challenge that we have to face to build our domestic ETS, and in the same way, to find the space for using 6.2, the mechanism, the approach under the Paris Agreement, to bring additional investment to foster that kind of innovation. For instance, the new renewable fuels that we need in our matrix, the hydrogen or other new energy sources that we need, the substitution in the industry sector of fossil fuel electricity or heat generation by renewable fuels, the electrification in the industry and in the transport sector, and so on. So 6.2 can be a driver of investment in those areas of innovation that we need to foster in our national strategy.
Thank you. No, and it, you're definitely highlighting the uniqueness of the Brazilian market, the Brazilian system. I'd like to zoom out a bit and look at the larger picture. I mean, currently we're tracking 38 different emissions trading systems in operation worldwide, 20 more under consideration. You mentioned earlier that you've looked at other markets that have been established for a much longer time to see lessons. I'm wondering, Secretary, is there one, maybe not just one, but a market that you've looked at to gather some lessons learned, or, oh, we will try to avoid that, we'll try to not go down that same route? Is there an example or a case study that perhaps interests you or that you're looking at to prepare ahead of that?
Yes, well, we have a former work on that. And recently, in the last 2.5 years, we have been looking at the different international experiences on that. Obviously, the EU ETS is an important reference because, you know, the long pathway, the track record that the EU ETS has in terms of improving the regulation and learning about former experiences in the EU ETS. So that is an important reference for us. And it is a good thing that we are, let's say, starting our process after so many experiences, like also in California and China have been already implementing for some time, South Korea and so on. But we are implementing based on all different approaches and experiences all over the world for some issues that are important. And we have been looking when we assess those experiences, how to make a good use of carbon credit as offsets. I think it's a very interesting thing. What are the challenges and the relevance of having a robust GHG reporting mechanism and building a good database on GHG emissions in a very, let's say, detailed and specific way that addresses our specificities in of our economic sectors? They use the potential that price stabilization mechanisms that like the UTS and other are already using in order to maintain, let's say, the price signal in the market, which is, let's say, the main basic, main important feature of the mechanism and so on. In general, that step-by-step approach, how to implement it in a manner that we can build knowledge, build experience, and based on that, go in the next step in terms of expanding the scope, bringing new sectors, innovating in terms of stabilization on the approaches of banking, borrowing, and so on. So we have been looking at that, learning a lot about that, but we also have in mind that we have the space to innovate, for instance, to open more space for those credits based on forests or nature-based solutions as part of the mechanism. And also, as you have seen, looking at what kind of international coordination between those different carbon pricing experiences, what kind of coordination can be made in order to build a process of alignment and of exchanging experiences, and maybe somehow in the future have a more coordinated, integrated approach to those different domestic jurisdictional mechanisms.
And talking about international collaboration, partnership, one of the biggest policies we've seen recently is the European Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism, the CBAM, which is rolling out on January 1st of next year. The European Commission has argued that this is a way of leveling the playing field for its domestic industries, since they've been having to pay this carbon price since 2005. And I'm curious, I'm wondering, how is Brazil preparing itself for CBAM? Is CBAM a concern for Brazil? And also, would Brazil, once its carbon market is established, is more set up, would Brazil consider a CBAM-like measure?
It's a kind of a very interesting, let's say, experience that CBAM has, and the interesting discussions and reflections that we have been seeing in the recent period. It's a challenge for us in Brazil and for all developing countries. You know, we do understand where it comes from, you know, the fact that companies in the EU jurisdiction, they are facing the price for their emissions in a very real manner and in a very significant prices in the recent years, and the concern that some kind of a unfair competition could have been going on, considering the import of products from companies that do not apply prices or do not apply prices at the equivalent level. But from the other hand, their approach of CBAM is seen from many, many countries as a kind of an unbalanced approach, because somehow can put a burden, let's say, in other economies that historically don't have the same responsibility in terms of the concentration of GHG that we have today, you know, in the atmosphere. So this kind of the balance of the responsibilities between different countries and what is the fair, let's say, share of the cost of GHG emissions that each part should carry is a very, let's say, complex topic. And in the UNFCCC and the COPs that has been mentioned in the, let's say, that framing of the unilateral mechanisms that can harm developing countries. I think it's a relevant and fair discussion, but I think we also can look at that in a more, let's say, proactive way, because GHG emissions, they are, let's say, a global externality that should be addressed, and carbon pricing is, let's say, an efficient mechanism to do that. The thing is how we can build a dialogue and at some point a kind of a cooperation framework that could agree on the fair, let's say, prices for GHG emissions in each specific situation, context, considering the different stages of development and the different responsibilities of the countries in the climate change, the problem that we are all facing today. So having a platform to look at that and to discuss and to find maybe some common basis to evolve towards a more cooperative approach around that, I think it's a good way to go. This is one of the initiatives that we and the Minister of Finance in Brazil is proposing for discussion in COP30 and beyond on how to evolve toward that. But we are in Brazil, the companies are preparing, you know, to not to start reporting and the CBAM mechanism and so on. For some sectors, it can be a question. Although we have low GHG emissions in general and in all different products, because we have this clean energy matrix and so on, maybe it's not properly accounted in the rules that we have under CBAM. So this is something that we need to discuss. And there are other side effects. We are really, in some sectors, are really concerned that maybe in Brazil, our market can be, let's say, invaded by high intensity, carbon intensity, intensive products from mm-hmm. other countries that maybe could not enter in the EU space and your markets and can be delivered here, competing with our low carbon products and so on. So this kind of side effect is something that has been raising concerns in Brazil and maybe in other countries as well. So I think the best way to go is not totally refusing the mechanism or reacting negatively to that, but in thinking on how to build a more, let's say, cooperative approach that makes sense and that is fair for all parties involved. And I think what we all want is that kind of mechanism can drive companies and economies towards decarbonization, and we have to move that way quickly. So if we can build an agreed approach to that, I think that it can be good for all our economies and for the world to face the challenge that we have to reduce GHG emissions quickly. That's what we need.
Yes, and you mentioned talking about a platform. Brazilian presidency had announced the International Coalition for Carbon Market Integration ahead of COP30, just seeing how different countries can come together and be part of this coalition. Adam, Secretary, I'm wondering, with this announcement of this Coalition for Carbon Market Integration, what would a successful coalition look like to you? Is there a timeline? What would this look like as a success to you?
I think we are in a very early stage of the discussions, although in different platforms, for instance, in the Partnership for Market Readiness, we have very good, I could participate in very interesting discussions on how to address that kind of integration between markets. So I think there we already have some knowledge and experiences on that. But I think we are, in general, in a new context. We have China, Brazil, maybe, and also other developing countries that are implementing or preparing their carbon pricing mechanisms. So the landscape is kind of changing. We have new players. And so because of that, I think that a good outcome would be to have an agreement and maybe indication of a platform and an agenda and prioritization of topics to be discussed in the next period. I think it would be too optimistic to think that we will have some, let's say, very specific agreement in the short term, but much more to build, let's say, a safe space for the countries to address the topics and to find the way to step by step move towards a more harmonized approaches between countries. GHG reporting is a good starting point, is a good topic. So to exchange what are the rules, the mechanisms for each sector. So this kind of identifying the key topics and building that agenda and the space to discuss that, I think it's a good outcome at this stage. And countries agreeing on that this is a good way to go and agreeing on joining the conversation, I think are good steps, initial steps for this agenda.
Thank you, Secretary Melo. And just last question, we have around 2 weeks until COP30 in Belém. It's the first COP that will be held in the Amazon. It's been called the COP of implementation. And I'm just wondering, for you, what would a successful COP30 look like?
There are different views and expectations around that. But what we see, the COP30 presidency is putting a big focus on the implementation. So we have this big, robust framework from Paris Agreement that is already in place, and we are implementing all those mechanisms and so on. What we need is to move faster in terms of mitigation and also in adaptation. So have good shared, let's say, global solutions for the main challenges that we have. They have the opportunity to exchange views and mostly to find the ways to scale up those solutions, I think is one of our expectations. But beyond that, we also need to advance the global ambition. We have to face the challenge that not all countries deliver their NDCs. If we sum up all the NDCs, they still do not put us on track for the 1.5 and so on. So how to address the challenge of raising the commitments and the ambition to to deliver what we need to face climate change and to have important outcomes in terms of adaptation. This is something that all countries expect. We have the challenges of finance and to have this roadmap that could be agreed to build the steps and to improve the mechanisms that we have to put private money, to bring bilateral, multilateral cooperation for the countries, have, let's say, some kind of a certainty on what is the money available, what are the channels, how they can actually access the money and all to make all the investment and all that we need to reduce GHG emissions quickly and also to increase our resilience, especially in developing countries, along the challenges that we have in our development processes. So it's a lot, many things, but implementation, agreement on the level of ambition and the means of implementation, I think are the necessary outcomes at this stage of the international cooperation around climate change.
Absolutely. And we'll look forward to hopefully meeting you in COP30 and covering how the negotiations go. Secretary Mello, I want to thank you for participating in our podcast, for joining us, and for walking us through the developments in the Brazilian carbon markets. Secretary Mello, muito obrigado, prazer, and we'll see you at COP30 soon.
Okay, it's a pleasure, Humberto. Hope you can meet there. Bye-bye. Ciao.
We hope you've enjoyed today's insider conversation on Opus Talks. Join us next time for a deep dive into another industry insider's world. You can find more Opus Talks episodes at opusnet.com/podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.